Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where working money is sometimes funny.
My money's always funny. Look. Today's episode is brought to you by PNB Premium on Patreon. If you want to receive early access to episodes, show extras, including bonus content and discounts on merch, in our soon-to-launch online store, you can learn more and support the show by visiting paypal.co/patron. That's paypal.co/patron.
Definitely, man. So PNB Premium members had access to this episode that you're about to hear today last week, so definitely check that out. Also, I'm part of a pitch for a panel at South by Southwest on leveraging podcasts for career success. Part of how the panel gets selected is through popular vote, so I need your help. So what you got to do, visit pickthispanel.com and vote. There couldn't be an easier link. Pickthispanel.com and upvote our session. And so you will have to sign up and register for an account to be able to do it, but it's real quick. Takes like a minute. I did it myself. So again, pickthispanel.com. Help me take the stage at South by Southwest, and that'll also be another chance for us to connect, good brother.
I'm actually jotting down an action item for myself that I need to vote for us at pickthispanel.com. Not sit here like a silent hypocrite telling y'all what to do. So it's going on my action item. It'll actually be done today because I follow the 2 to 3 minute rule, which I told Rich about this earlier. Was that this week or last week? I shot you the link over there. A few articles for the 2-3 minute rule. How's that going?
Yeah, yeah.
I do see you working through the paychecks and balances action items, man. So I feel like, you know, you're getting it done.
Yeah, it's working. Yo, it is the best thing ever. So I've been implementing it. I mean, I've been doing it more so for the side hustle stuff. I'm still trying to get the hang of it at the day job. I still find myself making lists mainly because I do block times at work. So if something comes in and it's not related to what I'm doing during that block of time, I just save it for later. But there are times where I should probably adopt that 2 minute rule because I've definitely had some stuff sit for days.
And just a quick overview for those of you wondering, the 2 minute rule, as it alludes to, is if it takes less than 2 minutes, you do it right then. No excuses. Basically, it's a way to break out of a procrastination habit. And it sounds cliche. It sounds probably to some people stupid, but it's been crazy how much more I've gotten done because before I usually have a little, you know, sticky note system that goes, and I'm like, before I pick it up, I'm like, look, Marcus, it's going to take 2 minutes. Get it done. And I just, you know, fight through that procrastination monster and knock it out. So try it out, folks.
Yes.
Try it out. Just try it out this week. Try it out these 5 days, probably 4 in some of y'all's case if you're not in the Patreon group. And let us know how it goes. Try out that 2 minute rule. Today, we're back for our part 2 convo on financial lessons we learned in our 20s and honestly carrying over into our 30s and things you can think about to create the financial future that you want.
Yes. So we hope you enjoyed today's episode and we'll be back next week. We'll also be back at the end of this episode. So we hope you enjoy.
Money is fungible in that all money is related. And actually, although we treat it differently, like this dollar's for lottery tickets and this dollar's for chips. So like, actually, that's just $2, which you are allocating it to whatever made up category you have in your head. But time is finite. You have a greater appreciation for it. I'm trying not to be morbid here, when you have less of it. So
yeah,
your days in your 20s, especially your teens, and you can just look at a kid. I mean, just watch the average kid. When there is nothing but time ahead of you, the freedom of it to waste it, to do whatever the hell you want with it, you take it for granted because it can be. And you should, because you have the most available resource available to you, which is time. But as that clock changes, or that allocation changes, let me put it that way, where now it's becoming more finite, that is no longer true. So yes, it does become more important. And I was actually watching a Gary Vee video yesterday, and this one was not one of his stronger ones, but he was talking to college students and he talked about you should make all your screw ups in your 20s and really take all the pressure off yourself because the greatest asset you have is time. And there aren't many, here's where he started to lose me. There aren't many financially, I agree with him, but in life, yes, there are mistakes you can make in your 20s that you cannot recover from.
I could think of several.
But financially, I see what he's saying. Or I see what he was getting at. And that's why I say it wasn't one of his stronger videos. But I'll give this example of the financial mistakes I made in my 20s were actually, and it was $30,000 worth of them, were actually less costly than had I made them at 35. And so what I mean by that is if I get $30,000 in debt by 22 and pay it off by 30, that's a much better scenario and offers me a lot more freedom than if I get $30,000 in debt at 35 and take till 42 to pay it off. Now I have less years to get compound interest, less years to make difference, less years to buy a home, less years to have children, less years to allocate towards anything. And I think that's what he was trying to get home is as that time on the back end shrinks, the mistakes you make are greater. They have a more significant impact because there's less time for them to correct.
And you mentioned this, but you're probably at just a completely different place in your life where you probably can't just up and move. There's a good chance you probably have a family. There's a good chance you're probably in a committed relationship. And there's a good chance that maybe you own property, you own a house, and you've just, you know, planted your flag and you've decided where you want to live for the next however many years. And so you wait longer and then you've got these additional expenses that you've picked up and the debt on top of that. Even though you're probably making more money, you probably find yourself in that situation where you're like, yo, I'm making more, but I feel like I haven't really evolved at all. It's almost like getting caught in the lifestyle inflation trap, but different somehow.
Yeah, it is. Because I would say it's a combination of lifestyle inflation. It's also a mentality because when you make more, it actually throws you off because we have a tax system which tackles you more as you make more money. And thus, it's not a one-for-one relationship anymore. So, for example, when I started my first job, I made $5.15 an hour. But if I got a raise from $5.15 an hour to $6 an hour, that was almost a 100% raise. Whereas now, if I get a 10% raise, about 7% of that is going to go to taxes. Like, it's just gone. So really, I got a 3% raise. And I was talking to somebody about this the other day as far as what motivates young people. And I got the impression they were frustrated that they couldn't get young people to be motivated by money. And I'm like, well, first of all, everyone's not motivated by money, number one.
That's not even what this generation is about.
Yeah, I think they are more clear on what money does, but more importantly, does not do. How quickly it can be lost, how quickly it can go away, and how it is important, but not everything. I think this may be the first largest generation where you go to work to work. I don't go to work to define myself. My work is actually something I do and want to do as little as possible so I can have as much time for me, myself. I'm trying to leave at 3:59, 37 seconds. I'm out. I'm walking towards the door. I'm counting that towards walking time. I'm at the elevator at 4. The buzzer better be going off at 4. I feel like I'm at overtime at 4:01. I can't believe they kept me late. You know, like that's what I'm thinking. Lisa said that my mindset, there's no way that you can read 12 books in a year and you not be fundamentally altered. And I was like, oh, I was a little bit skeptical. But you use your 20s to learn, 30s to apply, 40s to teach a mentor was something that a mentor actually said to me, and I still believe is true. But now my approach or my perspective, having gone through this process and in relation to something else I read, is that you can tell, I don't mean this offensively, I'm actually quoting from somebody else, but he said that you can tell when someone has just started reading because each of their ideas jump from the most recent information they have obtained. Whereas when you read a lot, you just realize there is more perspectives and ideas to have, and you gain an appreciation for what you don't know. So my new perspective is twofold in that, as I've acknowledged, the first million, arguably the first 100,000, arguably the first 10,000, the first pocket of money is the hardest to make because money itself makes more money. The second would be when it comes to money and life for many of us will be a marathon. And by that, I mean, it will take a lot of daily, monthly, and yearly smart money decisions for us to maybe become financially independent and by extension, wealthy. But for the purpose of today, and I think this ties to your example there, I'll use a 4x100 relay. So I'm assuming that everyone has either watched the Olympics, they know what the Olympics are, or they know a track is made up of four small 100 meter parts. So either way, for this scenario, you need to know that. If not, I suggest you Google it and hopefully you'll have an image up in front of you as I walk through this. So the first leg of the race, the first 100 meters, is the money moves you make from your 20s to 30s. Most people don't win or lose a race during that first leg. Now, as we talked about there with the Gary Vee video, some people drop the relay, they're out of the race. They fall start. There's all kinds of things that can go wrong. But for the most part, the probability is on your side that you will make it through the first leg of the race. It can be a good start. It can be the difference between finishing first, last, or not at all, but you don't make or break a race in that first leg. So your first 20 to 30 years, I can see why he would say there's not too much. There's always something, but the probability is on your side that you will be successful because the nature is low risk for everyone. The second leg, or the backstretch, is where all the moves you make from your 30s to 40s. So this is that learning phase that I talk about. you know, learn, you're applying now, 30s to 40s. You're applying what you learned and benefited from in your 30s. The 300 meters are the final curve. We're on that last, hopefully you've got that image in your head or up on Google Images, whichever you may be using. The final curve is your 40s to 50s. Here, you're likely making more money than you've ever made in your entire life. But to your point, like most working professionals, your income has effectively stagnated. So although you are making more money, you probably have the most expenses that you've ever had in your entire life. Home, mortgage, family, kids, insurance, and all these things. And as we talked about from the two income trap, all of those things have increased to a point where most families are spending 60 to 70% of their expenses are just three categories, and that's home, transportation, and food. So think about that, the insanity of you're living paycheck to paycheck, 60 to 70% of your expenses are just three categories. And I'll have a piece coming out soon, and I'll link both in the show notes, and I'll talk about all over the social medias about how you can try to control for that. But it's not easy. First of all, some of it predicts the future. And like I said, although you cannot predict the future, you can prepare for multiple outcomes. So you might either receive minimal raises of 3 to 5% if you're like average. If you work for a progressive company, you might get a bonus or merit raise or stock options. For the most part, you'll make the exact same money at age 48 for men and 39 for women, according to pay scale, effectively for the rest of your life. So the pay that you make, I guess, averaging those two numbers at 40, 50, so 45, is the amount of money you will take home as a percentage for the rest of your career. So as I talked about on another episode, that would only put you about one third, maybe two thirds, depending on your career, through your career, and you are done making more money. Effectively.
Yeah.
So when I say effectively, that means what you take home. Now there's gimmicks, and I mean legal gimmicks. You can put more towards 401k, health savings account. You can get better. You can work with a CPA or financial plan. If you're going to work one 9-to-5 job, this is where you need to start being nimble, smart, effective with the money that you make, because inflation's eating away at it, expenses are eating away at it, taxes are eating away at it. You're getting this trifecta attack on the money that you make from day to day. Or, like we talk about a lot, side hustles and extra income. Now, mind you, you're 30, 40 years old at this point. So go ahead. Sound like you had a comment.
I'm starting to know people now who are getting financial planners, or people that are younger than me who come from good money habits, who already have financial planners, and they're taking these steps. And like, and keeping it real, like, I'm playing catch up on the 401k front. I won't front. I've turned up my contribution percentage to the max, but I'm also already at that point where I'm saying, like, it could be worse. I am building some good habits now, but I've got some catch up to do. And I find myself in the middle of these 30s. It's hitting home, man. It's hitting home. I don't got all the family and all those other things to think about right now, but I do feel this pressure of, all right, I'm already behind. I'm trying to catch up and get ahead and have this life outside of work and do these things that I enjoy. And some of that stress could probably be mitigated if you are one of those folks who is in his or her 20s and you have the opportunity to start practicing some of these habits now.
Yes, I agree. And the only thing that I would either ask you or an open-ended question to the guest is, and listeners, is what do you feel behind is? So I feel, and the reason I ask that question that way is I feel that we put a lot of pressure on ourselves, much of it self-imposed, for a timeline that is either arbitrary or we've made up.
Yeah. So
what are you defining as behind and why?
So previously, I would say I felt behind, and that was kind of based off of what I saw with other people or from conversations that I had. But now it's when I say, okay, if I want to retire at 55 and I want to have this much money in retirement, and I plug that number into a calculator and I see what the number is that I need to have saved by now, that's what I mean by behind. So it's based off of a forward-looking goal. Like a tangible number, I'm like, this is the number that I need to get to, and I am behind pace for that.
Why'd you choose 55?
Bruh, I wanted to go even younger than that. Yo, I just don't want to be working until I'm 60 or 65, at least not in the corporate America capacity. I would love to be able to do what I want right now, you know, but that's not an option. So I just said 55. It's more realistic. It's still sooner than what the average is. And it won't be as painful for me to look at that number. Just keeping it real.
nothing you've said is incorrect. I mean, and that's why I've always said put the personal on finance. But the reason I ask those questions is I feel like I would say most people haven't even asked themselves that question or could not even give the answers you said. So if I'd asked why'd you choose 55, they'd be like, well, I read it online somewhere. And I'm like, well, that's a starting point, but is what does that mean to you? I mean, it's, if you're 55, you know, are your kids teenagers? Are they in college? Or do you have children? Do you have a cat? Do you have a dog? Do you have a wife? Do you plan on having a cat, dog, wife? Car, vehicle, luxury, standard, used, old, not at all. I got around Denver on public transportation for about 3 years, pretty much. Actually, about 5 years. And so the metaphor that I use is, it's like moving levers, but the metaphor I use is when you're trying to build the ultimate boss, so I guess this would be your retirement boss, and yet it won't let you put everything to 100%. And every time you try to adjust something to 100%, another bar goes down. So you try to put power at 100%, stamina goes down. You're like, all right, I need stamina because I got to fight a bunch more on the next level. Then you not got no power. And yeah. Whatever that looks like for you, I just think that sometimes folks aren't considering all the levers they can adjust. And I just found this out recently. It was a MarketWatch article. It said the difference between, now I'm not saying that I'm not advocating for this, but I get it. The difference between working from 65 or 70 is 15% or 7%. That's a huge difference. That's as far as hundreds and dollars goes over the lifetime of your career. So that's the difference between, okay, I have to work hard enough to find 15% extra income to save or half of that just by working 5 years longer. Because you have so much benefit, as I talk about, each leg of this race done correctly benefits you in the next part of the race. So the things that you've done in your 20s and 30s, the reason most people call that a wash is, number one, most people aren't thinking that far ahead. And actually, on average, most people don't even start saving or considering retirement until they start having family and kids. And because we're having families and kids and marriage later than every other generation before us, predating us, we are thinking about these later in our life. But I just don't want folks to feel intimidated that, well, the only lever I have to adjust is work and when I retire. I'm like, nah, there's like 13 easily off the top of my head, things that you could adjust. And another thing that I thought was really done well in Your Money or Your Life is she talks about people underestimate how much money they're spending to go to work because they just consider that a static portion of living life. Because you go to work, and this is brought up in Rich Dad, Poor Dad a lot, that you only see yourself as making money through work, and thus you're only streams that you see as well. If I want to make more money, I work more. And that's
actually one of the things that is,
yeah, exactly. So it's also universally false. Although people think that because that's the only outcome they know. But there's several other avenues available, but you just kind of have to tailor to your lifestyle and know that there are other avenues available.
Right.
And so kind of walking through this final curve, if you will, we're coming around to the home stretch. If you've made smart moves in your 20s and 30s, those investments have compound interest. They're taking off at this time because it starts to build up on itself. I think there's analysis that says the first million, and I forget the exact allocation that they use, but to get to the first million took like 27 years. And then to get to 2 million took like 7 years. Mm-hmm. Because that first million builds up on itself. So it's now doubling and tripling. And in that case, it would double. And one third of the time it would take for you to get to that first. That's why that first million is the hardest. Or if you wanted to be the billionaire lawyer who's
T-Bone Pickens.
Drake, I think. Pickens, there we go. When he was like, well, actually the first billion's the hardest. Both of those statements would be true, but I can't add three more zeros to the amount that I'm trying to get to yet. But it's never too late to start. And you want your money to have begun transitioning to working for you instead of you working for money as soon as possible. And like I said, easier said than done by the time you get to that 40s or 50s, because if you did time it that way, it is never too late. You know, the old proverb is the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago and the next big time is today. Same thing is true for retirement. In a perfect world, the final leg of your relay race. Now, if you've ever ran a relay race, they rarely go perfectly. I've been on the final leg before, is a beneficial transition where they just hand off the retirement baton, the golden watch, the pension, the 401k, whatever you signed up for. And all that work you put in earlier in the race as you ease from your 50s into whatever age you decide to retire, 55 in the case of Rich, financially secure, financially independent, debt-free, or minimal debt that you've chosen to carry in retirement, like housing or something to that effect, maybe other investments. And And all the decisions you've made over the last 40 years now benefit you in your remaining golden years.
You know, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, what else is it for me? And I think, and some of this is from being part of a podcast that deals with money, but also, you know, some of the conversations that I've had and stuff that I've read as well. But I keep having this idea of like, I would love to get to the point, or actually I'll walk that back. I think of the stories where someone's like, or I see someone say, my retirement is fully funded. Now I can enjoy life. Think I have some of that as well. I think some of that is just my personality, where I'm like, yo, I want to get caught up. I want to get to this target retirement number early. So let's say I do end up working till 60 or whatever, but at 55 or way sooner, hopefully I can be like, you know what? My retirement as I want it is funded. That means I can do some more things in the current. And that's like one thing that I don't need to think about as much. Whereas now I'm thinking catch up.
The only reason I pressed on that a little bit is, one, for the benefit of the listening audience, not just to mess with you. Number two was your money or your life. So a quote that I have on the review is, redefining work as simply any productive or purposeful activity, with paid employment just being another activity among many. There's only one purpose served by paid employment: getting paid. That is the only link between work and money. And the reason I walk through that is because in that scenario, if it was 50 or 55, looking at the average, you'd still have 28 more years to fill. So you'd have another quarter of your life, or life in general, to fill. And I think I read something recently that said, like, they estimate that 17% of people now, because of the improvements in health, will live into their 90s. So it's not that there's anything wrong with retiring at 50. There's nothing wrong with retiring at 30. There's nothing wrong with retiring at 40. The question then becomes, if you haven't asked yourself, well, what would you do if I didn't have to work? That's going to become a very real question and your next problem. Yeah. Because the great irony of, you know, and I am saying this as somebody who has no plans to work into their 50s or 60s. Well, I'm going to walk that back a little bit too. But in order to finish that statement is, what do you do on the other side? But as I started this podcast, and this is something I realized recently, I looked up, when's the quickest I can withdraw from my 401k without penalty? It's 59 and a half. So even if you did fully fund it, you have a gap year as a 9.5, or in your case, 4.5, by your own analysis.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to pay a penalty on it. And so that's what I'm talking about, like, is just preparing for the multiple outcomes that are available to you. And for me, the reason I keep harping on that is, it brings me a greater sense of peace that there is far more in my control than out, especially if I diversify or multiply the outcomes at which I could potentially control. All right, I control how much I can allocate to the 401k. I control how much I can allocate and diversify through my monthly budget. I control how much I automate and put into these responsible accounts. And then I control what I do with the money that is left available to me. And theoretically, I can control if I want to work 40 hours, 50 hours, 60 hours, side hustle, you know, //, like we talk about the slasher generation. These are things within my control. And for me, it gives me greater security to realize, you know what? Actually, what I thought was 70% out of my control is only 30. And then I can start working through that list and say, okay, is this 30% truly out of my control? And if it is, you know, serenity prayer, I got to make peace with it. I have to find the wisdom to accept the things that I cannot control. But I've got greater security because now I control 70%. And I think what you're talking about with that financial independence is, you can get it down to 80 or 90, where it's just all in your control.
Yeah. And I have that overambitious syndrome, and I wouldn't call myself type A, but I'm like, all right, like, I have these goals. I want to hit them as soon as possible so I can get to the next tier of goals. But I'm also realistic, you know, about one thing at a time. And I think that that's helped me get my own financial situation in a better place, where it was like, all right, you know, rather than say, all right, I'm gonna try to save this much, I'm gonna try to get out of debt at this amount of time, I'm gonna try to put this much in my 401k in addition to what I have in my banking account. Now I kind of say, all right, so next thing to do is to pay off this car note. All right, then after that, after I pay off the car note, I'm going to take that money and just reallocate that to savings, so it doesn't become money that sits in my account and just gets spent on foolishness like food. So I do work through things sequentially, you know, and I think it's important that people think about it that way as well, because I remember when we used to have the debate, so it's like, all right, so I have debt, but I also need to save some money. There's also my retirement fund. You know, I need to have a rainy day fund. Which do I do first? Figure out what's costing you the most money and maybe start there and then work your way back, you know?
I agree with you. And I'm also coming from this from a slightly different perspective, I'm now realizing. So I want to acknowledge that too. And I think actually the people have been appreciative of us for doing this on the show is I'm also looking at this from a different perspective, having come out of debt. And now I'm trying to figure out what do I do next? So to your point, if I was still in debt and when I was, that was my priority. My priority was getting out of debt. And now that's still a function of it because I have some minimal things like the car and things that I need to pay off. And I already have a plan for when I have that allocated. But now it's more like I'm looking at my career because, okay, the debt is not wholly behind me, but let's say it's the sunset is setting behind me. You know, the sun is like peeking over the debt mountain and it's about to go away. So now I'm looking at the twilight of my career, if you will. And I'm like, all right, this is another 40 years ahead of me based on the math. And what I think I've come to realize is I need to redefine work because what I don't like, and I talked about this before, is I don't like having a job. And I realized I used to think I didn't like my job, but I realized I don't like jobs. Jobs are these antiquated things that have existed since, I don't know, 1930 or whenever they defined the 40-hour work week, which somebody needs to be in. Anyway.
Yeah, let's not go down that rabbit hole.
And so that's what I'm talking about. But what I realized is like when I'm doing things like this podcast, when I have these opportunities to speak to groups, or honestly, even when somebody stops me, friend, frenemy, or foe, and just asks me a question about, you know, debt-free or the podcast or personal finance, whether I am paid or unpaid, and Jeff talked about this, that doesn't feel like work. And I could do that not only for hours, forever. Now, I'm not so existential that I'm like, man, I could do it for free. I'm like, I got bills to pay. I do the job because I have bills right now that still need to be paid. And I have not reached that financial independence that is talked about in Your Money or Your Life or Rich Dad, Poor Dad, where the assets account for all of the expenses. And then you just grow the gap between and then the rest is profit. Ideally, where it becomes so large a gap that you are financially independent. But if I could find a way to get paid for essentially doing what I like, as the cliche goes, I'll never have to work again. And I don't care if I'm doing that at 55 or 105. Having conversations with people that I enjoy and coincidentally making money for doing so, to me, is not work. And that's where I think I'm at that point where now, like, I'm defining the structure of what I think work is because I might never be done traditionally working. If I define that as doing something in my life where I am just not laying around the house or laying on the beach, that might be the cliche retirement. I might still be working, but it's no longer a job.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it goes back to the question that came up earlier from one of the books where if you didn't have to work or have a job as you're doing it today to make the money to stay alive and afloat, what would you be doing? And for me, it looks a lot different than the way my days look now. And it's not to say, you know, because, you know, I'm thankful and all of those other things that I have to say as disclaimers because people from work could be listening. But there are things that I could be doing with my time that would be considered work by some people, but that would feel like it takes much less of a cognitive load, you know, and I think there would be an additional level of satisfaction that I would feel if I was able to do those other things. And so, and I think we've said before, you know, so we talk about leaving a day job, but it doesn't mean just so we can go sit on a beach every day, because I imagine to some people, even that gets old, but it's that idea of going from having to versus it being voluntary or being a choice. And people will say everything is a choice, but yeah, I could choose to not work and I could choose to struggle and be stressed out and like not even make it to 55. Or I could try to be responsible, know that I have to have a job. There's certain things I need to do to reach these later goals and just do them now, knowing that this is only temporary. And I think that's where a lot of people are trying to get to, where it's like, how do I create a situation where I'm doing something that I can tolerate that puts me in a position to be able to do the thing that I love. And I ultimately bring that back to the idea of freedom.
Yeah. The purposeful exercise that I actually went through probably 2 or 3 years ago right now, it's still on my whiteboard / vision board, is I literally just wrote, be happy. And then I had to define, which is crazy because I didn't know what that meant for me. And so then I went through this exercise of just thinking back to the past few days or weeks. And like I said, it's 2 years ago now, but it even proved true today. My happiest days, I'm just going to go ahead and say this part of it, but my happiest days rarely, if ever, involve work. There's very few days where I look back over the year and I'm like, you know what? My happiest day was that Tuesday at work when, you know, Chuck and them came over and asked me to do this task for the TPS report. And I tell you what, guys, no, that's not how, when I'm reminiscing on New Year's Eve, that's not how things go.
Yeah.
But my happiest days consistently are just days where I wake up and I figure out what I'm going to do through that day, where that
you're in control.
Figure it out. Right. So I dictate the day instead of the day being dictated to me. Those are my happiest days. And I am trying to maximize the days where that is possible. And if that happens to be through work, then I will gladly do it because I would still be happy doing so.
I'm right there with you.
So I'll wrap up with these two things to kind of drive it home. So if I were in my 20s, you know, as we opened with, whether the money moves to the 20s, 30s, and 40s, I would say starting at age 20, let's say you do want to become a millionaire. And I wrote about this at paychecksandbalances.com/retire. That'll take you to retire a millionaire or how to save one times your income by age 30, which would get you there anyway. Starting at age 20, that exact amount is 200, call to action, 250 a month. That includes any employer match that you might have or have access to. That would be 10% of a single person's median income, according to the 2016 numbers. If you're in a household where both individuals are working, that's 5%. So it can be done. And what I've been talking about recently is difficult and impossible are not the same as improbable. So there may be things that make it improbable, statistics and things that count against you or lifestyle or family obligations, but it is not impossible. And I think for a lot of people, it has to be. I see a lot of these conversations and negotiations where we pretend like it's negotiable. Like, well, I'll figure out retirement when I retire, or I'll save for retirement, or I'll save what's left over. And I'm like, it doesn't make any sense to me. We're talking like this is optional, but you are going to get too old to work eventually. That's just a fact. Or like I said, the non-retirement plan is to die on the job, which is some people's retirement plan. But this is a factual reality. And so this idea that I'll get around to it, I'm like, it's going to get around to you first. So yeah. I would try to get there first. At age 25, that would be $400 a month, about $440. That's $15 a day. Now, at age 35, if you start it from zero, it jumps to $900, which if in that scenario, let me repeat myself. Age 20, $250. Age 35, 15 years later, that's $900. If I had a choice between those two scenarios, I'd take the $250 scenario.
And that's where I mean I'm feeling the pinch of catching up based off of the goals that I have for myself, where now I'm having to put away that huge chunk. And what did Financial Samurai say? Save until it hurts. Now, I won't say that I'm in pain yet, but I'm definitely feeling it more where I'm putting this money away and I'm like, I know this is something that I have to do, but I could have made this so much easier on myself if I started sooner. But hey, hindsight is always 20/20.
And again, if you're 35, and I would say even for 40, the book that I would recommend, it's a good read, although it's a bit blunt in this particular assessment. That's The Automatic Millionaire. And he offers a 5-step plan here. So dead broke in retirement, do nothing, and keep on doing nothing. Poor, spend everything you make each month and save nothing. Middle class, here's where he says to break free, pay yourself 5 to 10%. Upper middle class, pay yourself 10 to 15%. And to be rich, pay yourself first at least 15 to 20%. And he actually has a recommendation that you pay off your home early by doing 2 monthly payments or 26 payments each year. So he goes into a little bit more detail about that, about paying your home off early. And that would make you rich enough to retire, paying yourself first at least 20%. And if you wanted to retire early, pay yourself more than 20%.
The math
does support that. If you're in your 30s, 35 and older, you know, I hit Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey. He offers 7 baby steps. Those are save 1,000. So your emergency fund is 1,000. I've also heard some people make this 500. So save 1,000 first. Some people make 500. Candace talked about that on her episode, and I'll get that in the show notes, where she started off with 500 in savings and then started using the next 500 for investment. So that's another approach. Dave recommends using the debt snowball. Number 2, that's paying your smallest debts first and then snowballing your debt payments towards the rest of your debt. So you make the minimal payment and you make the largest payment that you can make on the smallest debt first. As you pay that off, you start rolling all your debt payments towards the next smallest payment, so forth and so forth, until all the debt is paid off. Once you've done that, number 3, finish the emergency fund. Number 4, maximize retirement. Number 5, college funding, if applicable. Then he says number six is pay off the home, and number seven is build wealth. And I still recommend, if you're in your 30s, The Do's and Don'ts of Money by Suze Orman. One of the, I think, best dopes that she has on there is don't let a mortgage lender tell you what your mortgage limit is. And then for me, I'll wrap up with, in my 40s, there are known knowns and known unknowns. So the knowns are, my FIN goal is 100,000 by 40. I have a bunch of reasons for that. I'll talk about it on another show. Then next, I have to figure out if I diversify the funds, move the index to cash, determine my next strategy, because as I told Rich, I'm not sure I want to wait till 59 and a half. So then it'll be like really well funded. It might even be in the millions, and I'll just be staring at it for 9 more years, unable to access it unless I want to pay taxes. The unknowns, healthcare, kids, insurance. I currently only have a $5,000 policy and basic short-term disability coverage because I ain't got no kids. Estate planning, legacy, parents, what do I want to do there? These are the unknown. They are knowns, but they are unknown knowns. Anything from you, Rich?
Nah, man. I'm really thinking about which box I will teach you to be riches in, because I know it's tucked away. I know it's tucked away in a closet somewhere. But I think in terms of themes, you know, putting the personal and personal finance, do what works for you. And if you are someone who's prone to feeling behind or like you got to play catch up, making sure that you understand why that is. Is it based on internal factors and where you want to go? Or is it based off of where you see others going and where you think that you should be based off of some external force, whether it's a parent or it's where all your friends are? And just knock it out sequentially and build momentum, man. Whether it's with reading, whether it's with getting back in shape at the gym, whether it's hitting a financial goal, is, you know, start slow, start small, and just work your way up with whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish.
And I'll get this in the show notes, but it's two that we've mentioned before from episode one, actually, Paychecks on a Plateau. And that's Business Insider, a salary guide for your 20s, 30s, and 40s. And from Fortune, How Millennials Can Play Salary Catch Up. So your assigned homework reading, call to action. And that's going to conclude this week's Money on My Mind. Remember, if you ever have a money question, be sure to email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com. Hit that Ask PB button at paychecksandbalances.com, or join the conversation on social medias with hashtag PayBal for a shout out and a response.
So that concludes our accidental two-part series. It was good to reflect and talk through a lot of these lessons, a lot of these insights, and I know we got quite passionate parts too.
Yeah, I really do feel like I've come a long way. I might one day even embrace the title of financial guru, even though people have already given me the crown. You know, I might even get more comfortable doing it. I do feel like I've learned a lot coming into my 30s and going into my 40s, which is technically right around the corner now. Anyway, if somehow you didn't get enough insight there, you can also check out my latest for Go Banking Rates by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/GBR. That article is actually what it's really like to be in America's middle class. They gave me some more data to play with. I break it down. I look at why the economy is rising and the middle class is stagnating, to be nice. And if you want to read all the deets, check out paychecksandbalances.com/GBR.
Yes. So if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts. Today's review of the week comes from US or Us Lover 2001. The title, insightful and educational. I absolutely love your show. I'm a regular, but usually binge listen while riding my motorcycle. Yeah. Is that safe?
I didn't know that was possible.
I usually binge listen while riding my motorcycle on trips where I have no signal. It's great. Keeps my brain focused. Thank you for everything you've taught me so far, and keep up the good work. So appreciate that 5-star review. And be safe out there.
I appreciate the dedication and the 5 stars. So shout out to you, US Lover 2001. And if you'd like to find us on social, we're on Twitter and Instagram at Pay Balances, and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. You can find our individual accounts at The Marcus Garrett with 1 T on Twitter, 2 T's everywhere else. Rich is available everywhere at I Am Rich Jones.
I am.
Don't forget to join our email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email. And there you'll receive our weekly newsletter covering actionable work and money tips and much more.
I'm over here recording in this, what I'm terming the bootleg booth. I'm actually in my bedroom closet, and I created this little soundproof box for the microphone. What I didn't take into consideration is that now I got to crane my head to look at my computer if I'm trying to read from our notes. So I have my head turned like 100 degrees. and was trying to read. So hopefully that doesn't come through and I don't sound all shaky and stuff. But anyway, thanks so much for listening to today's episode, and we'll be back next week. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.